Remaker's Mark Special Episode 11, Nostalgia. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Remaker's Mark. Here we are in our 11th special episode where we're going to be talking all about nostalgia. With me, as always, are my friends Andy Wicks, Jeremy Nilsson, Lee Hysteria, Mark Josting, and I am Kyle Dillahunt, and I will once again be your host this fine evening. So we're going to be talking all about nostalgia today, and we're going to kind of take a little different path here, but we wanted to talk about sort of the nature of nostalgia to start with. Don't worry, we're not going to get too philosophical, but yeah, maybe a little bit. This was brought on recently. I brought this up as sort of a potential topic, and what brought it on was the Back to the Future Day shenanigans. Now, because of Twitter shenanigans, there have been many Back to the Future Days because people have photoshopped the time flux capacitor. The flux capacitor. Wait, is that right? Time flux capacitor?
No, it's just flux capacitor.
Okay. The time circuits which are connected to the flux capacitor, which is what makes time travel possible.
Thank you. Good job. I'm just going to take out everything that I said wrong and put in what you said because that was perfect. So people would Photoshop in the day saying, hey, it's Back to the Future Day, but no. But then recently Back to the Future Day actually happened, which was October, 26th, 2015? Is that right?
21st.
21st? Yeah. Boy. Really batting 1,000 here on my Back to the Future trivia. Sorry. It was interesting. It started off as something that was kind of sweet, right? People like Back to the Future. That's great. I appreciate that. But it kind of grew, or it kind of wore on me as the day went along, because like brands were tweeting about Back to the Future. And once brands start getting into things, like, blech, it's terrible, right?
Yeah,
like,
that never ends well.
No.
Well, and so, then you had Michael J. Fox and Christopher Lloyd kind of doing a few ad spots together to kind of capitalize on it. And I mean, it really went from adorable to way too mainstream, which is a total hipster thing to say, but it was cool until everybody thought it was cool.
Right. Yes. Yep, completely. So, yeah. So that's kind of what brought this on, is that nostalgia is an interesting thing. So we all in this conversation here have played in a covers band called Thupergroup, which started out as largely a joke and then sort of turned into less of a joke. It was kind of a joke all along, but ultimately we ended up as a pretty good joke.
It's the only band I've ever been in that's made money.
That's true. Money. Yep. Sad but true. That is correct. So, you know, and playing covers, you know, is a big gig. Like, there are bands that make tons and tons of money. And the reality of being a musician is you will have your artistic career and that will be probably fine, but then you'll probably make your money playing in cover bands. And, you know, that all speaks to nostalgia and the fact that people in White Bear Lake or Minneapolis or wherever, like, want to go out and they want to hear music that is familiar to them, or in this case, maybe movies that are familiar to them. So I just thought it was interesting to think about that. You know, there was the Back to the Future Day, Don't Stop Believin' at the last scene of The Sopranos, like Bohemian Rhapsody in Wayne's World. So there's all these little, you know, snippets over the last 20, 25 years of bits of nostalgia that have come back and sort of made a big cultural moment at that time. So today, with that in mind, we're going to talk about movies and nostalgia, and about for us specifically. So this isn't a cultural thing. This is just for us. So we are going to be talking about two things. The first of those is a movie that we individually loved as a youngin that held up really well for us. And we're going to talk about what that means, what it meant to us back then, and what it means to us now. And then we're going to take a brief break and talk about some Facebook and Twitter and feedback. Boy, how did we get a lot of that? And then we're going to go on to movies from our childhood that did not hold up well and why. So up first for movies that have held up well and why is Jer. Jer, you want to take it away?
I will take it away. The movie that I picked for a great example of a childhood movie that I remembered fondly and then watched again in my adult years and still thought the world of is the 1986 classic Labyrinth.
Ooh, nice.
Brilliant.
Nice.
With everyone's favorite crotch bulge David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly and a bunch of Jim Henson produced Muppets and puppets and creatures and comedy drama, dark magic, whatnot, goblins. I watched it and immediately remembered how much I enjoyed it and enjoyed it the exact same amount.
Wow.
Like exact same amount.
Not 87.6 enjoyment.
Yeah.
Nice.
I thought about that one too. And And even as a kid, I thought it was, you know, a little bit hokey and cheesy. But as a, you know, as I grew up and watched it again and again, I thought that it just got like its flaws just got more charming.
Yeah,
yeah. It's from a special effects standpoint, it's got its pretty corny moments, and it's you know, from just a storytelling movie, it kind of goes off the rails a couple times, but like you said, that all just sort of adds to the charm of it.
Good pick.
Thank you. Mark, you are up next.
Darn tootin'. I'm actually going to cheat on the theme a little bit. I'm not going to talk about a movie so much as a series, because in thinking about nostalgia and my youth, the thing that really is the central theme is cartoons. Well, so I wanted to talk about an anime series because, hey, that's my jam. and specifically, I wanted to talk about Robotech.
Nice.
I remember watching that series as a kid with my brother as well. And yeah, I mean, we watched the hell out of that show because transforming fighter jets in space, yes, on a giant space aircraft carrier that could also turn into a giant robot, yes. But hey, it turns out that show was actually really well written, and it's mature and it's nuanced, and it is not the stark black and white good and evil type of action series that so many kids are fed. It's really a great series, and I will watch the entire thing again as soon as I can find the entire thing without having to pay for it. So that's my pick, is Robotech.
Nice. I did not watch that ever, but now I really, really want to. I mean, I guess I was aware of it, but I did not watch it as a kid, and boy, now I really want to.
That would have been very early 80s, like 81, 82, somewhere in there?
85, actually, at least for the American release, I think. Okay. But you can also find it under the name The Macross Saga, and I don't know what else I had to say about that.
Sounds good.
All right. Andy, you're up next.
Sorry, I'm just kind of going through pictures of Robotech and trying to imagine if I ever saw it or not. I feel like I did, but I think maybe I'm just wanting to say that I did.
That would be pretty badass today, tell you what.
That would be, tell you what.
Yeah, well, there are some modern sequels to it. And badass? Yes.
Awesome. All the yeses.
All right, cool. My choice for movies from my childhood that I recalled fondly and, in my opinion, held up fondly. Wait, held up. Yeah, whatever. 1971's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, nice pick.
Yes.
Thank you. I'll have to give Kyle a little pat on the back for reminding me of this one, because I was struggling to come up with something. And I've spoken about my affinity for this movie in the past, but this is a top five movie, I think, for me overall. And I there are just so many parts of it that are perfect and wonderful. And Gene Wilder is a big part of that. And still as magical today as it was back then.
Nice.
That's all.
Yeah, that, yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds up differently. I think that's one of the things that nostalgia can bring out, is that as a kid you are mystified by maybe the color and the story and the fact that it's about candy. I mean, like, you get most of the themes as a kid, but it's very different. Like, I can't imagine how I viewed the trippy down the river scene, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, as a kid. Like, I probably just saw that as a means to get to the TV room or whatever, you know. But now as an adult, you see all the subtext, you see all of the, you know, kind of drug culture references, you know, it hits in a different way. So I think that's one aspect of nostalgia that can be really interesting, is like, maybe you hear it differently. You're not just experiencing it with positivity because you experienced it with positivity before. You're seeing it in a different positive way.
It's a good way. That's a great way to put it. And I think that it appealed to me maybe in a different way as an adult than it did as a kid, but just as much. And I think if nothing else, my appreciation for it grew.
I think one of the things that makes things hold up over time is when you come back to them and see it in a different way. And I, the choice that I picked, Labyrinth, there wasn't a lot of that. I mean, there was probably a little bit, but I know on the Facebook discussion we were talking, they were talking, I didn't get involved. We're talking a lot about movies that you came back to as an adult and realized that there was this whole other line of either jokes or subtext that were for the adults that you as a kid completely missed. But now coming back to it as an adult, you realize that, oh, this movie was saying something to kids, but it was also saying something to adults that I just didn't even pick up on as a kid. And now I love it even more.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting when you think about, like, Pixar gets such great positive attention because their movies work for both kids and adults. And I've never thought of it before in that it will work for me as an adult now, but 20 years from now, when the boys are older and watching it again, like, it will work for them differently then. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's mm-hmm. like a continued layered thing. I've never thought about that until as we're talking about that now, but it's not just that it works for adults now, it works for adults that were kids when they saw it the first time. Right. So that's pretty cool.
So when the boys are doing this podcast many years down the road, they'll talk about Pixar films.
Yeah. Remakers Mark The Next Generation. Remakers Mark Enterprise.
Deep Voyager. Space Remakers Mark.
That's going to be it. That's totally it. I love it. Nice.
Wrathbone.
Wrathbone.
Sorry. Lee, what is a movie that held up well for you?
Well, my movie is one that doesn't really get talked about a lot, but it, you know, to this day, it's still one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's Some Kind of Wonderful that came out in 1987. It's directed by Howard Deutsch, who I believe is married to Leah Thompson.
And wanted to be John Hughes.
Yeah, and I believe he, yeah, and it's written and produced by John Hughes, but directed by him, and this is the movie that he met Leah Thompson on, and they got married years later. But it's a really good movie about an 18-year-old kid kind of struggling with who he is and what he wants in his life, and he's having to deal with that issue in school as well as at home. And, you know, when I saw it, I think, when I was 13, and I was just starting to kind of go through that stuff. So I was more interested in all the crap that he went through in high school. And then as I got older and I kept on watching it, then I was more interested in the issues he was having with his dad and, you know, how his dad wanted him to do one thing and how he wanted to do something else. And now I think it holds up for me because I don't think you really ever get away from those identity crises. I think they tend to come back up at different times, like in adulthood too. And on top of that, it's just a really good movie. It's enjoyable to watch. The music kind of dates it a little bit, but I think the story is pretty universal.
I remember really liking that back in middle school, high school when it came out. I haven't seen it since, but I do have fond memories of it.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, and Eric Stoltz and Mary Stuart Masterson are really great in it too.
That whole dynamic is now kind of made fun of as an 80s trope with the best friend that actually likes you, even though she's trying to help you get the girl.
Yeah.
I mean, that's made fun of for what it is, but they did it so well in that movie from what I remember.
Yep. Had a great Hollywood ending to it.
I don't think I've ever seen this.
Really? I'll
seek it out. Yeah.
It's good. It's really, I recommend it. I mean, I really, really liked it.
So. It's a fringe Brat Pack movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
Because they're not, the main cast is not quite in the Brat Pack, but they were basically in the Brat Pack.
It's like the non-union Brat Pack.
Right. The Brat Pack scabs.
The scab pack.
No, that's
somehow that didn't catch on. That's weird. Oh.
Because it's disgusting.
Yeah, that's probably it. Yes, I would say so.
But on to Kyle.
Yeah, I this one I had a much easier time finding than the second half of this. But all right, which one am I going to pick? I got three here that I'm staring at. I'm trying to decide which one to talk about.
Pick the one in the middle.
Oh, I was going to do that. Excellent. It's Spaceballs.
Nice.
So this has a very special memory for me in that I had, like, you know, I wasn't like a sad child or anything, but I didn't have like a lot of birthday parties. I think I was just kind of like the, you know, I lived farther away. You know, I went to school in Brainerd, but I lived in Nisswa. So I was like 20 minutes away from all my friends. But so we did like, it wasn't a lot of like hanging out. You know, I couldn't like bike to my buddy's place. Hung out with my neighbor a lot. He was cool. That was fine. But the one birthday party that I like hugely remember was a McDonald's birthday party, which is just terrible, but awesome at the same time, where I had a bunch of my friends and then we went and saw Spaceballs afterwards. And it was glorious, as you can only imagine. I mean, it was so great. So I got to see Spaceballs in the theater, and I specifically remember the ship going over, you know, the first scene, mm-hmm. and kind of like just going from like to to just like everyone just like uproariously laughing. I mean, just going nuts laughing. And then, you know, we break for nobody. I mean, it's just like, so from, you know, the get go, it hit hard. And speaking of, you know, getting things now that I didn't get then, there are some jokes in there that are pretty harsh, you know, for kids. We watched it with the boys pretty recently, which was, I think it was an okay decision. It wasn't a terrible decision. Again, they probably didn't get a lot of it, but if they did, oh well.
I think there's still jokes fine. That I'm too young for in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But so again, we just watched it within the last year or so, I would think, and it held up. And this is an interesting one that in our Facebook feedback, a couple people said that Spaceballs did not hold up for them. So it was a very much a beloved movie, I think, for a lot of people as kids. But for me, totally holds up. Are there dumb jokes? Hell yes. Are there really dumb jokes? Hell yes. Are they great? Yes. It is so great.
Yes.
So, Spaceballs is my pick.
That's a good pick.
Thank you.
I did just watch that recently within the last year or so and enjoyed it, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I thought that I would enjoy it.
Yeah, it's not perfect by any means, but it was really, really fun, and it still held up. I was afraid that it wouldn't hold up to the point where I wouldn't like it, so I was really hesitant to watch it again. There's been some other movies that I'm very hesitant to watch again in fear that that will happen, that I won't like it. And so I went for it, and it ended up being okay. I was all right with it. All right, so we just want to touch briefly. So I threw it out to Twitter and Facebook and got approximately a gajillion replies. So the Facebook post is a mile long. I'll link to it, and then I don't know if it's fully public or not. I'll see what I can do. But otherwise, I'll maybe throw a PDF of it in there, because there's some really great dialogue back and forth about movies that people really liked and really didn't like. I'll just feature one here. Becca Olhorn Rahlstad, who has contributed here in the past, said, "Just talked to a friend about how Newsies did not hold up. We loved it as tweeners. Also just watched Never Say Never Again, and the technology is so spectacularly out of date that it should almost be its own genre of nostalgia. Retro advanced technology, possibly cooler than steampunk." So that was a good example of both movies that held up and did not hold up, or pardon me, movies that did not hold up and for different reasons. So I love the idea of the tech gap. There are so many movies, especially Bond movies, that are flagrantly fouling in that regard. So definitely check those out. We'll link to that in the show notes, which you'll find at mathishard.net and on your podcast client for this episode. So now we are going to move on to those movies that we loved as kids that did not hold up and why they did not. So Lee, do you want to start us off with that?
Sure. Mine, it wasn't exactly from my childhood, but it's another coming of age movie that came out in 1996. Called Beautiful Girls.
Great movie.
I really, really liked it when it came out. And it's one of those movies that the more I saw it, the more I saw problems with it. And to this day, I really don't care for it anymore. Just because it's so preachy or didactic. And there are so many scenes in it that have nothing to do with what little story is there. And the band that plays in the bar is one of the worst bands I've ever heard in a movie.
Are they really playing or are they fake playing?
I don't know.
Either way, it's
bad. Yeah, they're terrible. But, you know, I was interested in this because, you know, Uma Thurman was in it and, Timothy Hutton, and I knew who Natalie Portman was from The Professional. And I did like the dynamic between Timothy Hutton's character and Natalie Portman and the exchange that they have. That's kind of interesting, but for the most part, there's really nothing that goes on. It's like very low stakes. It's just kind of a laid back, didactic, whatever. And it's just, I can't watch it anymore. I mean, it started out great for me, but I don't know if it's just my age or whatever, but I just can't do it.
I'm going to have to try this one again too, because it's been a while since I've seen it, but I really love this movie. And, I think Lee, you and I probably came to it at different points and started with different appreciations of it.
Okay. And yeah.
I feel like it's a film that's basically about an existential crisis.
Yeah.
And so like the material stakes are low, but the personal stakes for Timothy Hutton's character are pretty high. Like he's basically trying to decide whether or not he wants to upend his life. And
yeah. I mean, the stuff with him is fairly interesting. But like that scene where Rosie O'Donnell is walking through the drugstore or whatever, prattling on for like 2 minutes about how men are pigs, has nothing to do with anything else in the movie. And it's just in the little monologue that Michael Rapaport gives when he's in his bedroom about beautiful girls, that has nothing to do with what's in the movie. So I mean, other than the title, I don't know, it's just a lot of stuff like that, the filler that really annoyed me about it.
That can hit in different ways, for sure. And I like the idea of coming at it at different times and from different places.
Yeah.
That speaks volumes.
Yeah. And like I said, it just could be my age. I don't know.
Yeah. And I know that when this movie hit me, I was also in an existential crisis. So I think it spoke to me.
That can work wonders.
And again, I haven't seen it in a while. So now that I'm not in said crisis, then I'll give it another shot and see how it lands.
I can't remember the last time I wasn't in an existential crisis.
Permanent state.
Yeah. But Andy is up next.
Sorry, Dells, but I chose Spaceballs.
Did you really?
Oh, no.
Awesome. Oh, no, that's great. That's perfect.
I wondered if this would happen.
And I'm actually going to pick two Mel Brooks movies, Spaceballs and then Robin Hood Men in Tights. But I'm going to focus on Spaceballs.
All right.
Because really, I never really liked Robin Hood Men in Tights all that much anyway, to begin with.
Yeah, that one really never held up at any point.
No, but I loved Spaceballs as a kid. And I was right there with you, Kyle. Like, it was the thing that tickled my funny bone. That sounded gross.
I'll take it.
Okay. I was the target audience for that movie. When it came out, I was, probably 10, 11, 12, you know. Prepubescent boy, you know, just learning about, like, you know, grody humor and things like that. And that was just, that was perfect. But going back to it, and especially comparing it to other Mel Brooks movies that I truly love, this one is just, I can barely get through it now. And I feel a little bit dumber every time I watch it. You know,
it is definitely on the juvenile end.
Yeah. I'm not usually one to shy away from juvenile humor. Just ask my wife. But this one, for whatever reason, just like, come on. Like, I think it's because I know Mel Brooks has done other movies that have, you know, it's safe to call it juvenile humor, but that are so much funnier or have so many other layers to them. We talked early in the first part about jokes that, or movies that you go back and watch and you realize are all these jokes as an adult that you never caught as a kid. I'll talk about Blazing Saddles as an example of that for me. Partly because I only saw the TV version for a long time. But when I finally saw the real version, then I realized, like, the jokes in that one are still racy. You know, and this movie was made in the early 70s. Like, the jokes are still kind of edgy and racy. And there's a couple that were, you know, you hear it and you kind of go, ee, like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, but they're done in a way that, like, pokes fun at the establishment a little bit. Whereas Spaceballs is just like, fart jokes and, you know, Pizza the Hut and stuff that was, they were like cheap laughs to me. So,
yep.
There you are.
I will entirely give you that and still own my previous.
That's totally fine. I will say, though, every time I hear the line, "Where the hell are we? Paris?" will make me laugh.
What the hell's this thing got, a Cuisinart?
That's another good one.
That's a joke that you don't know what the hell it means as a
like
kid,
there right? are lines that will make me laugh, but at the same time I'll be like, oh, my IQ just went down.
Yep.
Didn't we watch this at one of my birthday parties or something like that?
Probably.
Like when we did the board game movie Space night thing. Balls.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. We watched Clue and we watched this.
Oh, man.
That's a good night.
That would have been a good night.
Yeah.
I sense another one of those coming up here.
Oh. Maybe we could do a double feature when I'm in town.
There we go.
Anyhow.
I'm in.
So, Kyle, after I just slapped you in the face with the gauntlet, what say you? You're going to say Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, aren't you?
With what will you slap him in the face?
I will borrow your gauntlet and I will slap the childhood of so many people in the face with my pick, which is Goonies.
Really? Oh, wow.
It's a fine movie, but it is not, for me, it is not the glorious childhood adventure that I think it is for most people. It just didn't hold up in a way that I expected it to, and maybe I had too high of expectations upon rewatching it. It's still okay, and I will still show it to the boys. I think if they've seen it, but I think we'll probably watch it again. But I won't hold it in quite the same esteem as I once did, and I don't know what it is. It's very loose, and sometimes that can be really great. And in this one, it just feels a little bit too off the rails at times. Yeah, I don't know. I can't put my finger on exactly what it is, but I was really surprised at how much it did not hold up for me when I watched it last.
You know what, Kyle? I think you'd be surprised at how many people agree with you.
Yeah?
Because...
Yeah, there were a few on that the Facebook
that's,
poster.
That's another one. And I think Goonies, probably more than most films of that era, are a victim of their own fame. And
yeah,
like the hype that became... The hype that was built around them after they were released.
Yes.
Like, it was such a success at the time, and then kind of this, you know, the legend kind of grew around it, and it couldn't hold up to it. It's a fine movie. I agree with you. It's you know, for what it was a fine movie, but I think it was built up in hindsight. This is, you know, an example of nostalgia that its shoes became bigger than it could ever fill.
Yep. I think Back to the Future has a little bit of that too, though. I feel like that holds up a little bit better. I still think that's really enjoyable. But I think it has that same kind of, like, people are speaking as though it's like the Citizen Kane of entertaining movies. And I don't think it is. It's just like a good movie. It's a good, fun movie.
Yeah.
And those are great. Like, I do not begrudge it fun at all. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think it time can warp that a little bit. So yeah, sorry, everybody. Sorry, not sorry.
I know what you mean, though. I mean, I enjoyed that movie a lot as a kid, and I have a lot of fond memories of that movie. But if I hadn't seen it as a kid and I'd watched it now, I'm betting that I probably wouldn't like it as much.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Yep, yep.
My wife saw the movie for the first time as an adult, and she was not impressed.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yep.
I had the same experience with The NeverEnding Story.
Yeah, there was a lot of that,
I can see more.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I was like, this is a popular movie. Yeah.
That's
this piece of horse crap.
That's very out there, too. Yeah.
Better movie, yeah. Goonies or Stand By Me?
Stand By Me.
Stand By Me.
Wow.
By far.
That one holds up really well.
Yeah.
That's a pretty, pretty extraordinary movie. Yeah. All right. So let's move along here. Sorry. Not sorry. Jer, on to you.
I'm going to go, and this one took me a long time to come up with because there's a lot of movies that I know don't hold up and for one degree or another, but I wanted to pick a movie that I'm really disappointed didn't hold up. And so I chose Tom Hanks in Big.
Ooh.
Wow. Interesting.
Because I love that movie as a kid. I even, as an adult, won a Halloween costume contest going as a character from Big. And then I watched it again probably 2 years ago or so, and it was just dull. It was boring. Robert Loggia is in it, which made me laugh, but I don't know what it was. It was just not, entertaining at all, and everything kind of fell flat on it, and it really depressed me.
Isn't that funny how that can happen? The reaction. Yeah, I don't think I've seen that one since. I mean, I feel like I've maybe seen it twice, but it was long ago.
Yeah.
Now that you said this, Jer, I'm kind of afraid to watch it again.
I know, and I wish I hadn't. I wish that I just had the memory of it.
Right. Yeah.
But now I have that memory, and then a more powerful, more bummer, current memory of.
Yeah. Yep. My one like that I'm afraid to go back to is Natural Born Killers. because that one like had a big effect on my movie watching. And it's weird enough that it could tap into whatever it tapped into me when I watched it at 16 or whatever, or it could just come off as totally bloated because I know it is. I know it's bloated and over the top and dumb, but sometimes that's exactly what you need. So I'm very scared to go back and watch that one again.
I'm scared to go back and watch Mulholland Drive.
Oh, that holds up.
Does it? I think really holds up.
I hope so.
I think you'd be okay with that one.
Yep. Let us assuage your fears.
All right.
I don't know what to say about Big anymore, so I'm just going to pass it to Mark.
Excellent.
Flawless.
I fear that my pick is going to shatter a few childhood memories, kind of like Jared's pick. Again, keeping with an 80s anime series.
I know what you're going to say, and I almost did it myself, but then I stuck to movies.
Yeah. Do you want to say it?
You're going to say Voltron, aren't you?
I'm going to say Voltron.
I know it.
Wow. Yep.
I was going to say Voltron, and then I decided to stick with the movie theme, but I wanted to say Voltron.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, when I was a faithful watcher of Voltron as a kid, and, you know, what's not to like? I mean, you've got you've got your big robots that combine to make a bigger robot? You know, and flying around in space and fighting evil. What's not to like? Well, it turns out the writing.
quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, the voices, the very premise, it lacks any substance. I mean, compared to Robotech, which I talked about in our first section, which is mature and realistic and talks about some real issues, Voltron is just... Hey, there's good guys and there's bad guys. Why are there bad guys? I don't know. They're bad. Yeah. And they fight.
They
That's what they
red
do.
Red lasers.
Yeah. So yeah, it's basically, you know, the color of their lasers. We have to learn to see past it.
That's right.
I was so excited when Voltron, the first couple of seasons came out on Netflix or Amazon Prime or something. It was free.
Yeah.
And
yeah, me too.
And at the time when that happened, I was with a girl that had a then 5-year-old boy, and I was so amped to show him Voltron because it was such a big part of my Saturday morning cartoon watching. And so we sat down and watched it, and I pumped it all up about robot lions turning into a giant, bigger robot with a flaming electric sword and whatever else. And we watched 5 or 6, 7 episodes, and I realized every single one of these episodes is the exact same plot.
Yep.
Like, without any sort of deviance from that. And we watched a good block of it, and he enjoyed it. And then a couple days later, we came back, and he's like, hey, let's watch something. And I said, you want to put Voltron back in? And he's like...
Try not to be rude.
Let's watch something else.
Like, is there a nature documentary we can watch instead?
And at first I was like, oh, he doesn't like it. And then I was like, I don't want to watch it either.
I don't like it.
And I would suggest that if you want to go back to the 80s with robot action cartoon series, you know, Transformers holds up better. It's still a very flawed series. It's really easy to make fun of, but you know, it's more enjoyable as an adult than Voltron is. And certainly there are lots and lots of other series that are just really, really great in general, no matter how old you are. Another one from the 80s would be Ronin Warriors. Anyways, I don't need to talk about that anymore. Voltron was really a terrible series, and I'm sorry that I did a retrospective a couple years ago.
That's all right. Just had to try. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I was suckered into it. Damn you, Netflix.
Yeah, indeed. All right, so that wraps up the second half of that, and with that, this episode. So I'm sure someday we'll look back and feel nostalgic about this, and we'll see how we feel. Maybe our voices will seem just a little bit deeper in our minds. We didn't say all those stupid things that we said, but you know what? That's okay. That's what we're here for. This podcast is a proud member of the Math is Hard Network. If you would like to find out more information about this podcast or any other podcast or blog on the Math is Hard Network, check us out at mathishard.net. There you can find show notes as well, where you can find links to all of the movies and series we talked about here, as well as links to other shows. So definitely check that out. Gentlemen, this was a fine time. I am always nostalgic to the last times that we spoke, even if it was just near minutes ago. Until the next time we talk, may the Force be with you.
And also with you.